Hello and welcome back to the Long Distance Love Bombs podcast. It's me, your host, Dr. Jeremy Goldberg, founder of Long Distance Love Bombs. I'm trying to make kindness cool and compassion commonplace. Welcome back. My guest today is Elijah Kala McShane. This man is such a vibe. I've been following him on Instagram for a while now. I met him in Maui at a retreat that I was assisting my friend Mark Groves in running. And Elijah gave the introductory talk slash workshop. And immediately I was like, this dude is a vibe. His energy is very aligned with my own. He's fun, he's brilliant. And from a professional standpoint, he is an ambassador of Aloha. He runs and founded an organization called AwakenedAloha.org. You can find it online. He's a spiritualist. He's a transformational speaker. And he's also known on Instagram as the son of Oahu. And so he is a devoted ambassador of Aloha. His mission is to share the way of Aloha. He's reached millions of people around the world through his work as a speaker and a facilitator and a ceremonialist. And his message is revolved around three different fundamental principles of Hawaiian spirituality, which are the Aloha Aina, which is connection to the land, Aloha Akua, connection to spirit, and Aloha Kanaka, which is connection to one another. And you will see within the first 5 minutes of this conversation that Elijah is unique. And this one is different than any other chat that I've had on this podcast. I've done more than 200 episodes, and I have long tried to find somebody to come on and have a chat from an indigenous perspective. I've reached out to many individuals and many organizations, have not been able to find someone. And I'm so grateful that Elijah has agreed to come on and share his wisdom. His story as well is very interesting. And this one, I just kind of sat back and took it all in. He's got a very wide-ranging perspective and education. He's essentially doing a lot of healing of intergenerational trauma. And we dive into some bigger, more contentious topics related to capitalism, colonialism, etc. He has this great word called re-indigenize. Anyway, I love this chat. I just sat back and enjoyed it thoroughly as I was hosting. Had several moments where I forgot that I was hosting a podcast and just was kind of enjoying his various TED Talks that he was giving. So anyway, you can find him online. I've put links in the show notes to all of his stuff. You can get into his world. I follow him on Instagram and love his fresh and honest and positive pragmatic perspective. I hope you enjoy this conversation with Elijah McShane. Elijah McShane, you just told me that you want to be the rainbow to all people. Perhaps that's a place to dive in. It's good to see you again. Thanks for coming on.
Hey, peace and love. You know, how we usually start everything in every conversation, every call, is I lead everybody through a little bit of a prayer, you know, and this all gets integrated into our conversation on why it's important to be able to do these things and to re-implement these really ancient practices that seems to be at the center of the human experience. But a lot of people in the Western world have not been practicing it for a long time because their only example of doing prayer has been in the church, and maybe they have like an unhealthy history with things in the Christian experience. And but to encourage everybody listening that isn't only a Christian experience, it's a human experience, it's a cultural experience, is what we have all done since the beginning of time. Is we pray, we sing, we chant, and we dance. And so the introduction of this, I want to give everybody a little bit of information on what the history in this chant. It's called Eulu. It calls forth all of the embodiments, like each of the gods of Hawaii, which are all expressed in our elements. They're specifically expressed in Kinolau. And so Kinolau is a plant form of a deity. And so like in Hawaii, historically and spiritually, people think that our people are polytheistic people, or like an animistic people in one way or the sense. But we are actually like all of them. We kind of have a tendency to give an integration that, yes, all is one, one is all, but all is expressed in the many, and the many is expressed in the one. And so it's neither just either or, it's both. Yeah. And so in this Oli, I'm going to encourage everybody to have your eyes closed. I'm going to unify everybody in breath and to invite you to ekomo mai into this space, into this conversation, and to also give an invitation to all of your ancestors to be present with you. Because in this conversation, I pray and I hope that it opens up a puka to inspire you to be connected to who you come from and to where you come from and the practices of all of your ancestors. And so every time you hear hanu, please take a deep breath. When you hear ha, you can exhale. These really three breaths connect us to three main principles in our work in the way of aloha. That is aloha aina, aloha akua, aloha kanaka, to have connection to your land and to honor your land, to honor spirit, to honor each other. And in our understanding, if these are put into practice, you have the chance to live in a state of what I call Hawaii, you know, to be in a state of peace, of bliss, of abundance in all ways. So, ekomo mai, hanu. Ah, aloha aina. Hanu. Ah, aloha akua. Hanu. Ah, aloha kāna. E ulu, kini o ke akua. Ulu kāne me kanalo Ulu o hi alau koa me ka ie. He mai a noho I ko kua hu. He a ka waila, he wai e ola. He ola noi. And may all things be given in love, grace, and favor. Me ke aloha aina, aloha akua, aloha kānaka. Me ke aloha Hawaii ni. Te wanana. Ama marua no. Amen. Te wanana.
Man.
Ola.
That was beautiful, brother. And I feel like I'm ready to lie down now instead of have a conversation.
Yeah, you.
Man.
Absolutely.
Feel good. Nobody has ever started a podcast like that before. That was
There's a first time for everything, in the words of Ronnie Coleman. First time for everything.
Did you grow up just singing like that and like doing that, or did you take voice lessons or what?
No, so you know, brother. Usually, if you meet any Hawaiian, a majority of Hawaiian people are pretty attuned to the oratory arts. And even if this particular person hasn't had any experience in singing in a formal way, a majority of our people are still able to do so. And it's our karma as being people of Hawaii for 2,000 years, our people, all of our cultural traditions, all the mo'olelo, all the history of stories, had all been based on the oratory arts because it didn't have a written language. And so the oral, our history had been encapsulated in song and chant, in dance and hula, and in the art of storytelling. And so a lot of our people just have that in them, and they don't know that that's actually a like specialty of what it means to be a person of Hawaii. That's like built into us. And so a lot of people don't ever explore it, but a lot of people do explore it. Like the thing is, to actually sing and to do music and to chant is actually integrated into our school systems. And so it's just a part of it. It's like the people of New Zealand too, of Aotearoa, it's involved in curriculum. It's like, because how we learn, like I can hear a song once or twice and I can know the entire song. Yeah, it's like, you know, just in me, right? And it's because of our kupuna, of the practices of our ancestors. They had been really attuned and acclimated and had been experts at just having an understanding of how to speak, of the power of speech, power of music, power of song. And I guess that just kind of came through. And so, yeah, I'm a, you know, like a little bit of a cultural practitioner specializing in chant and song in one way or the other, but I kind of use it in an innovative way that is applicable to like all people and not just in the cultural context of what it means to be Hawaiian.
Yeah. I'm realizing we should probably step back momentarily. I'm thinking of someone listening to this right now who is like, who is this dude? So before we drop in any further and talk about you and your work and your mission, do you mind sort of describing who you are and what you do and perhaps why your business is Awakened Aloha?
Absolutely. Aloha mai kako. Pakahia pau, kapu'ia kahonua, peace and love to all the people of the earth. Aloha. It is it's an honor to be present. Ova Elijah Kala McShane ko inoa, no Hawaii ku'one hano, no o ahu kakuhi hewa mai au. I come from Hawaii, the islands of Hawaii. All of my ancestors been in Hawaii since the beginning. As we like to say, hey Hawaii, au mawa mau. I am Hawaii, always and forever. I have lived all of my life on the island of Oahu. If you're unfamiliar with the Hawaiian Islands, it's the main island where Honolulu is, and the kind of infamous, I guess you can say, place of Waikiki is also located. It's the paradise of the Pacific, as people say. You know, I try not to use that, but I'm a spiritual culture practitioner here in Hawaii. Inherently in our lineage, I'm half Kanaka Maoli and I'm half half European, so half Aboriginal Hawaiian, half non-Hawaiian, I guess you can say. But all of my ancestors on the European side, they came to the Hawaiian Kingdom. And so I'm a little bit German, a little bit Irish and Spanish, and Portuguese. Like a lot of Portuguese, half my family on my dad's side, they're all Hawaiian Portuguese. Yeah. In terms of a title that people kind of put on me and what I embody as a whole, and I've always been, is an ambassador of aloha. So I live aloha. I teach people on how to live aloha, how to give aloha, how to be aloha, and how the principle of aloha is a superior principle for all aspects of love, of peace, of harmony in our individual lives, in our communities, in our interrelationships, in on a country level, a national level, and on an international level. I feel that it's in the words of Auntie Pilahi Paki, who was a cultural practitioner and a philosopher here in Hawaii in the 80s and 90s. She has a famous quote that is a heartbeat of a lot of things I personally do in our work in Awaken Aloha, is that the world will come to Hawaii in its exploration and search for world peace, because Hawaii has the key, and that key is aloha. And so in our work in Awakened Aloha, our statement, our kuleana, our mission is to inspire a world where the spirit and the principle of aloha is the heartbeat of humanity, and reconnects people to their ancestors and their culture practices. Because it's our, you know, each of us, it doesn't matter how much a person has had a disconnection to their culture, to their homelands, which when you think about it, a majority of the Western world, especially in the United States, is not in their homeland, which is a key, you know, a key perspective and a thought that I plant, you know, in the infrastructure of all conversations that I have with people that are not from Hawaii, because of the fact that it's important to acknowledge the key important role that our place has in our identity and in our health and well-being, and how having connection to our ancestral homelands has always been a fundamental part of our spirit. And if you are not in your ancestral homeland, if you think about things on a DNA level, a lot of that information that gives you the mana of all of your ancestors, they have a difficult time kind of giving an unlocking of that information to you because of the place that you currently live that potentially is not the land of your ancestors. And so, as an advocate of helping people reconnect to culture, it is crucial that I put that out on the forefront, that as a Hawaiian, I have the honor, the privilege, and just the blessing of still living in my homelands of my kupuna. And I have a chance to walk in the same lands and to swim in the same oceans as all of my ancestors did for the past 2,000 years. And that's a thing that a lot of people on this planet is not able to say. And so I'm thankful, which leads to the next point. It's like, that's why, you know, where it's important to also preserve culture and to preserve people, you know, and to create economic systems that help people to stay in their homelands, or else it pushes people out and displaces. And so it's good to be with everybody. Ano ai me ke aloha. Aloha no.
You're the best, bro. You
are. Sorry, man. That's a whole introduction that just unpacked everything.
You're the best, dude. And I had a hard time prepping for this conversation because there's so many angles that we could go. And I wrote down topics and I realized, oh, this could be at least an hour just by itself. And then I wrote down another one. Oh, shit. Like, this one could be at least 2 hours just by itself. And there's so much to unpack. And even you mentioned a few there whereby you live in a place that has strong historical and ancestral significance that is still very much a living culture.
Yes.
And it is alive. And there are people all over the world that want to go and feel what it's like to be in the place that you were born and raised and that your ancestors were for centuries, for millennia, as you said, from the beginning. And there's this kind of friction that develops in that, whereby you're living in a place that has a world-renowned reputation for beauty and all kinds of other wonderful things. But as a consequence of that beauty and the history and the culture, it has faced tremendous amounts of adversity, exploitation, aggression throughout the last century, several centuries, right? Mm-hmm. And so how do you manage to maintain that sense of aloha in the face of this like very complex kind of ecosystem that surrounds Hawaii, which is this beautiful little green dot in the middle of the ocean? But there's a lot going on. Does that make sense?
Oh, 100%, brother. This is an important, you know, kind of thing to engage with in conversation. My approach in doing this, and the reason why we really specialize in this work, which is like kind of a niche work, very niche work, because inherently in being a Kanaka who is half Kanaka, half European. It like seems like in who I am, you know, in like a DNA perspective, yeah, and a genealogical perspective, I live in both worlds, right? And so it's like, if you see all the world issues that's been happening since the time of the Roman Empire and even before it, and, you know, like you see the history of Europe and how that spilled into the introduction and the organization of the states, and, you know, and then the influence of the U.S. into Hawaii, the influence of England and Hawaii and different, you know, things. I come from a perspective that, one, in order to even get an understanding of how to propose a solution that overall is aligned, is pono, it works into the greater good of everybody, you have to realize a few things. One, it is what it is. To just get an acceptance of history, to have an acceptance that things that had happened, it doesn't matter how good, how not good, how unhealthy and destructive, how prosperous, it all plays a part in the mo'olelo. It all plays a part in the story. And so to have an understanding of our current, you know, like duty and responsibility today, it's a Hawaiian concept that you can't understand the place that you're going and you're headed to if you don't understand where you came from. And this is like a navigational concept. Yeah, it's like, historically, in the past 2,000 years, the experts of wayfinding and navigation in open seas is the Polynesian people, specifically the Kanaka Maori. It's our people, yeah, who are experts at doing this. And so, like, a lot of our principles and philosophies actually stem, like, through and out of all the teachings of how to wayfind, because it's a good way to kind of get an approach of how to see life, right? Like, you're in the middle of the ocean. How can you put a guarantee that you are on the path to get to Hawaii or to Tahiti? You have to have an understanding of everything around you, of the place you came from, to pinpoint things in the star system that gives you indicators of where you came from, to know positioning, how to go, to have a reading of things in the ocean environment and the winds and the waves and the currents, you know, and, you know, to get a full spherical universal understanding of your current place. The only way to do that is to know where you came from. And once you know current place and where you came from, then it gives you a pivot point to realizing, okay, this is the direction to move towards. And sometimes daily, the currents are going to change. The winds are going to change. What's going to happen sometimes is you're going to engage in 30-foot swells. How do you overcome this, right? And so this can all be intertwined into becoming like a master of life, because all of those things are also in play allegorically in our life. Yeah. And so through being a Kanaka, understanding how to move into a better future, I was always in pursuit of that all of my life until, having a spiritual awakening of knowing like what I first must do. I was trying to put a lot of emphasis on the future, but I didn't put a lot of emphasis on who I came from, on where I came from, on all of the historical events on a bigger scale of the people of Hawaii. You know, and then through all the historical events that takes place in my extended family, and then all of the historical events in my core family, like that all plays a role in who I became, in who I am. And a lot of people in the Western world have a tendency to pursue who they are on the outside of them instead of, yeah, going inside. But if you're going to get an understanding of what's going on inside, you also got to know things in your karma. And that's like that begins with your two parents, the experience and upbringing in your household, you know, a lot of things in historical trauma, like, begins in the family, right? And so, like, the all the stuff that happened there, and then continuing to unpack that in a genealogical way. Like, how did that take place in your line? Who was the one that actually started, like this action that caused almost a curse on the whole line? You know, it's only if you have an awareness of who that is, of what that is, that you have the power to change it. If you don't have the awareness of that karma taking place in you and how that lives and shows up in your daily life now, then don't even think about putting a solution to it. You know, like, you know, I mean, like, you're just going to be throwing paint on the wall. Right. And so in our work today, you know, to bring it full circle and answering this whole question, I began to really ask the difficult questions and to speak to myself and speak to Kumu's teachers who are kind of experts, kind of in this space. But it was also going to be a personal journey, because I didn't hear a lot of people in our community speaking about these particular things. And I knew that I had to understand it on a deeper level. And so I started researching a lot, started reading a lot, but, you know, I started to actually put into perspective how important our spiritual connection and culture connection really is to having understanding of self. Because in the core of our work, it's a peace organization. It's a peace work. Our goal is to unify. How do we unify? Teaching people the culture values of not only Hawaii, but how teaching people that the culture values of Hawaii that is still intact as a living culture is able to be a great example to everybody that these principles and values also live in your indigenous cultures. If you're a European person who didn't grow up connected to your culture, what a great opportunity today, with all the information provided, with all the access to go to your homeland that is provided to us now, on identifying these core principles and values to live everything in your life by, and to live them actually through the experience and the worldview of your ancestors. Because if you only grew up in America, then most likely you have an American worldview. And how's that been helping us for the past 100 years, 200 years? Hasn't been doing too good for our prosperity as a collective people. So, and people are looking for, you know, like, new ways. People are looking for, like, different options on how to prosper, because obviously the things in the American dream has worked for a specific amount of people, but for the masses, it doesn't really work. So what's the other option? It's to go back, you know, like, instead of being to kind of be involved in an ambitious culture that is progressive, it's to be involved in a culture that you know, kind of goes back into the past, and to reintroduce those ancient cultural principles and values that are inherently in your DNA, because you carry the same information that your ancestors carried. You have it in you. And only when you begin to speak their language, you know, to actually hear things in their songs, in their chants, and to understand the principles and values, that you really then get access to the worldview. And that's what ultimately we're after, is like the consciousness, is the worldview, because you can't propose a solution in the same consciousness that created the problem. So if we want to create new solutions, we got to plug in to new information, maybe new information to you because you've been disconnected. The information has been there all along. It's not getting access to it. So, yeah, bro, that's a little bit about kind of what we do in a nutshell, bro.
Just that.
Yeah, you.
So, you go, man. We need like a month to unpack this podcast. Mm-hmm. But it sounds like what you're touching upon is this idea that there are individuals who are adrift from their lineage, from their ancestors, from their place. And then those individuals collectively join together to form a culture that is somewhat adrift. And so they're kind of adrift together, trying to figure it out. And I think for many people that you spoke about, there's this feeling that this ain't it, that there has to be another way, that this isn't working. It's not sustainable. But there's like a gap from that realization to, you know, what do we do about it and where do we go? And it sounds a little bit like you are taking a trauma-informed lens to then operationalize the reinvigoration of cultural heritage as like a primary action to take now to help try to change some stuff. Did I synthesize? Is that it?
Yeah, Brian, the easiest terms, you know, and I try to utilize things on my platform. So I'm going to be introducing a course this next week. It's going to be called, actually, it's going to be called, I had a different, like few names for it, but, you know, I think I came across a name that it's going to have, that I'm going to go with. And it just came to me. It's going to be called to Reculture. So Reculture has infrastructures, plans, and systems on how to decolonize, how to re-indigenize, how to reconnect, and how to be inspired to do so, and how to make change for all of your family in a trauma-informed way, right? Because it's like, I hear a lot of people speaking about, you know, I got to charge my computer, bro. Sorry, bro. I don't want this to die, bro.
Yeah, you're good. But just, I've heard that word decolonize a lot, but as a word dork myself, I don't think I've ever heard that word re-indigenous-ize. What did you say? Re-indigenous-ize? I like that. Can you say more about what that means?
Re-indigenize.
Re-indigenize.
Yeah. So to re-indigenize takes the lens off of, you know, in just words, yeah, you know, it's just, it's the power of like the placement of particular words. Like it could be considered to be the same thing, but in the word in and of itself, to decolonize still puts the emphasis on the colonization and the like need to unlearn and to undo the trauma, which then puts more emphasis on the trauma itself, right? Re-indigenizing is actually to relearn what was lost. And in the process of relearning what was lost, you already unlearn and undo what was introduced to indoctrinate you to another way of life. And so it's not to say that the American way of life and the processes of indoctrination was wrong. I would say it's negative, you know, because it's not fully in consent. It wasn't humane, but it's a part of empire. So this is what empires do. This is what they've been doing since the time of Genghis Khan. You know, it's not anything new, right? But in our approach to re-indigenize, it's not only to help people to feel that, you know, because like a lot of people who claim to be quote unquote white, or in our sphere of conversation, to be a white-bodied person, they have no connection to what it means to be indigenous or to that word indigenous. And they consider themselves to actually be excluded out of the group of being indigenous. Is that true? You know, in my perspectives, a lot of people who are thinkers and philosophers in indigenous spaces, they all come to a common agreement that we all are indigenous to a homeland, and we all come from place, but it's the ones that are considered to be indigenous today who are the closest to our ancestral connection. But it's the Europeans who have been like the furthest in their historical connection to who they come from. Because the time of the Roman Empire, even previous to that, people in Europe have been getting displaced and uprooted through the introduction of a new thought system that ultimately had been enforced upon them. It wasn't even an option. I mean, kind of like the Roman Empire had controlled a majority of the world at that time, from all the way up into half of Asia, all of Europe, to half of Africa. And they controlled all the population and trade routes. And how they did it was through military force. You know, it seems like that's how the United States is. Yeah. Because they base everything based on Rome. And if you go into DC and you look at all the architecture, where do you find all the architecture? You find all the architecture in Rome. Yeah. And so the principles and philosophies are consistent. And then the issues are consistent. And the infiltration of culture is also consistent on having a hierarchy of superiority of particular peoples to be in charge of the things in the system, instead of it being, in essence, a collaborative system, a cooperative system, where everybody has equal say, equal right, and equal access to actual resources, if the responsibility and the honor code in the bylaws is, of course, you know, held into consideration, right? And so, yeah, to answer your question, brother, that is what it is. It's helping people to actually become reintroduced to the values and principles of their ancestors. And that also involves a little bit of, you know, like the process of the processes of being like a decolonized person. But I want to put the emphasis on re-indigenizing instead of being, you know, going through the process of decolonizing. You know, it's two different approaches.
Yeah, it's similar when I work with people. I'm a big stickler for words too. And for example, if you describe yourself and your future and say, hey, I just don't want to be scared anymore. That's what my dream. It's like, well, hang on. What if you focused on being brave instead of not scared? Right. Yes. Because the not scared still centers and focuses on
the fear,
on the fear. Right. So I think there's similarities to what you're proposing, which is, you know, it's a little bit the same, but it's also drastically different.
Yes.
And the way that we talk about these things matters, because words cast spells, right? And they're powerful things. I like that a lot. Re-indigenize.
Yes. And this is for all people who are cultured and people that are not cultured, right? Like for me, I had, you know, I'm interested in doing this work and I'm inspired in doing this work because I had to go through these processes. And I seen the immense impact that it had on just how I see myself and who I am and how do I fit in. Yes, I live in Hawaii. I'm a Hawaiian. You know, I guess to a lot of people, people see that as being privileged. Like, hey, a person who is still in their homeland, still connected to culture. I haven't always been connected to culture. It was already in me. It was inherently instated in me as being a Kanaka. I grew up in a Hawaiian family, yes, but keeping in mind that a majority of people in Hawaii had been Americanized for over 85 years. So for a generation to two generations to three generations, even people today who are Hawaiian, they don't even know what it means to be Hawaiian. They don't even know. They think they know, but it's actually immersed in a perspective that is American on what it means to be Hawaiian. It's like the ancient books or the like history books in a time of the Hawaiian kingdom or post-Hawaiian kingdom. It's like if the people who are Hawaiian, if the children are reading Hawaiian history class, great, awesome. They're teaching the children history. Who the fuck is the author? That's the thing, right? Because you can have a Hawaiian history class. You can teach Hawaiian history. But what is the worldview and the perspective on Hawaiian history that is being taught through the teacher and through the authors of the books? And so I come from a perspective that it's better to have a person that is non-Hawaiian to host a Hawaiian history class that is teaching through literature who comes from the consciousness of a Hawaiian author, a Hawaiian teacher. Because at least in the framework of the thought, at least the framework is Hawaiian. And, you know, and then the covering or who's facilitating it doesn't have to be Hawaiian if the framework is. You see that, right? And so instead of having a Hawaiian teaching Hawaiian in an American perspective, it's still perpetuating principles and philosophies of America, but it's hidden with Hawaiian values. You see that? Fucking interesting. I call on my, but I swear sometimes because I'm passionate Hawaiian.
Yeah, this is some deep philosophical stuff. I am really loving this. I love conversations like this.
This is the good stuff, Russ. You know, probably, oh, I gotta go back to the drawing board like that.
Yeah, you catch me staring off into space a moment ago of like, oh dang, I've never thought about that. Mm-hmm. Okay, I relate to this too. I don't know if we've talked about this, but I spent a couple years living in American Samoa.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah, like a decade ago. And that's also an example of a place that is a very live, beautiful, traditional indigenous culture that has been impacted significantly by American capitalistic tendencies for a century or so. And so you would see traditional lunches or whatever, and they would have like a bucket of KFC. Right. Mm-hmm. Or Big Macs and the health impacts and the impacts on culture. It's fascinating. And so this idea of re-indigenizing a culture that has evolved or adapted from what it once was seems to be complex. And I imagine that even within the Hawaiian culture, there are different viewpoints and opinions held quite strongly. I'm guessing here as to how do you do this or how do you begin to do this? Are there examples of places in the world currently that are sort of an aspirational example of what you're describing here? Like, has anybody done this well?
Yes and no. Actually, through a little bit of research in this space and kind of getting an understanding of people, of history, the emergence of indigenous peoples is now. It's happening in our generation. Yeah, and so so this maybe started in the 80s where, like, you know, the space and time of the Hawaiian Renaissance had really sparked a lot of inspiration for all indigenous peoples to like lead to today, where I feel today we're absolutely living in a time of an indigenous renaissance. That's what's happening. Our biggest tool that has helped us, I'd say the biggest tool, but it makes a huge impact and difference in really being able to spread information is just getting access to platforms like Instagram, TikTok, social media, YouTube, people having free speech and having having a platform to relay information. Because in empire, you control all the information happening and going out. So people could, you know, it could have a bomb in the Pacific. 100 years ago, people would know nothing about it. People would know, you know, hey, bro, the only way to get information. But if you're in the middle of the sea, I mean, you know, you kind of put a scroll on a raven. You kind of put a scroll on a raven. But in Europe, you know, scrolls on a raven was absolutely a thing, right? And so the access to information is helping in this because it's just truth. It's coming out where we're experiencing an awakening in our generation that humanity as a collective has never experienced, which is is really important to know how to handle that, because on one end of the indigenous movement, people are putting focus on culture arts, you know, they're doing great and rehabilitating the people in health and wellness, doing great stuff as people in those communities, doing political action, awesome stuff. But as a collective, I've seen a common thread of an absence of really knowing how to make peace with all of the pain and trauma that's really taking place, and how to bring this conversation to international levels, you know, with leaders of countries, on like teaching leaders of countries, like being able to mandate this, like mandating, if this was put into place, if this was, you know, in place legally already, then there's a potential that things in Israel and Palestine, you know, to hit the point that it's currently at, it wouldn't have gotten there. If everybody who's leaders of countries, all the governments have to take a quarterly or an annual class, a workshop on de-escalation, on peacekeeping, on how to heal the people, like really speaking about aspects of like the conflict resolution, to getting a really holistic perspective of leadership that is informed. It's culturally informed, it's pain and trauma informed, it's historically informed. If that's where our leadership is able to be based off of, then our decisions would change, because we're really getting an understanding of the total sphere, the whole indigenous universe that has existed for such a long time, that really, you ask an indigenous person in the United States if there has been any proposition of conflict resolution in a way that one is public, it's accountable, and it's honorable. You ask anybody that. The United States has been a country for over 400 years. That shit has never fully happened. And if it did happen, it happened at small scales. It didn't happen, you know, on the public eye for everybody to see, like, wow, peace is a possibility. I mean, like, the biggest thing that maybe happened is like in the time of MLK and the civil rights movement. You know, that's the biggest thing that helped to like bring peace and resolve. But how much did it actually do in a systematic way? You know, helps to bring the people's spirits up. Yeah, but in bringing hopes and spirits up, there needs to be an infrastructure, system, and strategy on how to mobilize that in a systematic way. Yeah. And so I feel like a lot of the like people that are trying to do this work, you know, it depends on kuleana. It depends on the person's higher responsibility, which depends on the gifts, the skills, and the capacity of the person. I've always kind of been an extreme guy. And so I, you know, I come from a perspective where like, how can we do the most all the time? Yeah. And in order to have this mission accomplished, it takes getting exposure to all of these different spheres and trying to go into prayer and ceremony, asking for higher intelligence to come through and to have inspiration and counsel through spirit, through your kupuna, because all of this truth and intelligence to help to make the world a better place, it's not going to come in our current world. It's going to come from getting access to higher intelligence that people do have access to if they're willing to put themselves in spaces and in states of consciousness to become a vessel of that information. Yeah. And so I don't see people doing this on a community level, maybe on a community level, they're trying to do this. I don't see it being as effective as it could, you know, just let me put it out there. For all the people doing the work who are listening to this or who will listen to this, I love you. Continue doing the work. Hey, you're doing great stuff. Everybody is only able to do the things that they can do with what they have and what they've been given. So as long as you're doing that, you keep on going, you're on the right path. Everybody has a different responsibility. I'm trying to get this in a way that is that is ultimately able to be institutionalized. Yeah, and to do that, I first need proof of concept, which I start through doing online courses for our community and see how this helps people, you know, and then we go to stage two and bring it in into a community level, you know, into small school programs, you know, into the workforce, getting it involved there, proof of concept and funding, boom, goes to the next level. And then ultimately gets institutionalized into the curriculums where all teachers are trauma-informed, culturally informed, historically informed in what they do. If they are, then the perspective on how they teach, on how they implement is going to be completely different with how they're implementing now.
I love this. Yeah,
infiltrate the system, baby.
You've got my vote, bro. When are you running for senator or governor or whatever?
Soon, bro. Soon, bro. You know, yeah. Like maybe age 38 to 40. I got some work that I got to do on the outside first. And then when I turn 40,
yeah,
I'm going to jump in the race to become the mayor of Honolulu. And then on the next campaign cycle, I'm going to jump in the race to be the governor of Hawaii.
Then it's on.
It's the plan.
Do you... I'm often facing this myself, which is extreme frustration and disappointment. And it's easy to feel sad or disappointed when you look around the world at the state of things. And one thing that helps me is to remind myself that this is the way it's always been for those at the tip of the spear of change. And I think back, you know, 100, 200 years ago, when you could own human beings and women couldn't vote and you could dump pollution into the streams and the rivers. And that was cool. And you could beat your kids and that was fine too. And that at that time, there would have been people like you and like me and like so many listening that are banging their heads against the wall, shouting and saying, there has to be a better way. This is not okay. And so that gives me comfort when I have that perspective. But how do you manage those frustrations or the knowing deep inside that there is a better way and that you really believe that this can help so many people while at the same time there's bureaucratic and historical, you know, momentum saying, you know, Elijah, that's a nice idea, but book an appointment next week or that'll never work, or like, you know, give it a 5-year plan. And it's like, no, like people are suffering, we gotta go.
Yeah, but there is a combination of all of it, bro. It comes down to ultimately, like, if peace of mind, you know, is because I can absolutely attest to the fact that people's capacities are different. Because even just being able to talk on these things is going to get people overwhelmed. Like, so where do we go? You know, it's like at any given time, an attack could happen on any place, you know, and people can be completely displaced and their lives ruined. Like, look, a good example, Israel and Palestine. And so it's like it first comes from a place of you have to identify how to maintain your peace of mind in order to make changes and to make decisions out of a state that is effective, which is the state of peace, the like state of consciousness that is based on love, is based on the bigger picture, but is also progressive. Yeah. And so I've learned that in order for me personally to have that peace of mind on a consistent basis, radical acceptance of the state of the human species, complete acceptance and understanding of where people are at, complete acceptance and understanding that those leaders that you hate and you have a difficult time listening to, they make decisions out of the information they have. Obviously, if they're not actually making healthy decisions, helping everybody, it's because they have a limited amount of information to make their decisions by. That's the truth of the matter. Okay. But if they're still making decisions that aren't good, how are you able to do what you can with what you have to propose a solution to mitigate in a trauma-informed way and to be progressive in the spirit of the light? Because those things could be seen absolutely as being like, oh my goodness, those are heavy negatives. They're always going to exist. That's just the truth of the matter, is that if you ask a Taoist, who is right? The yin and the yang. And the Taoist is going to say, whoever proposes a solution to help to mitigate the peace and you know, to keep unity in that given time. So it's a situational basis. It's what's appropriate to propose, you know, because at times peace has to be achieved through engaging in warfare sometimes. Yeah. That is just a fundamental thing that also happened in Hawaii. Yeah, we can have conversations of peace, but if we can't come to an agreement, then let's bang, bang. And so at international law, there are laws in place that even in times of warfare, you can't just do anything. You can't just kill civilians. You know, like, come on, you cannot be killing women and children. Yeah, if people are hurt, yeah, and there's a team of healthcare professionals that are making their way in to help civilians, you can't block them. Come on. You know, be a little bit humane. And then this, and to keep in mind, it's like warfare is not against the people. It's the military warfare. It's, you know, which is a part of the issue in the first place. I say decommission all atomic bombs and nuclear weapons. Decommission all of them. All of them. That's the only way. Because if anybody still has a nuclear weapon, then whoever's in charge of that sees himself as having an upper hand on world control, then proposes threats to other countries to then create nuclear weapons in secret nobody knows about. And then too late, all these conflicts are happening international level. The community is just working, staying with their families. At the push of a button, it could end all of them. You know how not only hurtful, but like ignorant, disrespectful that those things are. And so I propose to everybody that all of these changes and human innovations never came from the government. It comes from people that operate on a grassroots level. It comes from people like me and you who are innovative, who have an entrepreneur spirit, who ain't gonna take any objection, who is gonna do it, who will find a way, who will make it happen. And who will do so because they are inspired through a vision that helps everybody. It's not an agenda-based position. It's a vision that everybody needs to prosper, including you and your family, right? And so if everybody wins, you win. If you win, it doesn't mean that everybody else wins. And so it's in the words of my sensei, always do things that is to the betterment of the collective. Because when everybody wins, you are with everybody. You also win. But if you choose yourself, it doesn't mean everybody else wins as well. It's also a teaching of the Messiah. If you want to get introduced to who you truly are, he said, if you want to know yourself, you must lose yourself. Give up yourself and pick up the burdens of the cross, quote unquote, and follow me. In other words, give up everything that you think you need and work to the highest purpose of helping the entire planet to be peaceful and saved through truth and love. If you want to live by that, in order to do that, you got to drop everything, bro. You got to drop everything. Yeah. And so like for me, the example is I gave up everything that I thought I wanted to do, things in bodybuilding, things in business. I gave up all of that to first reestablish every brick at the foundation of who I am. I took 2 or 3 years off, never even did any business, did Uber full time. And I went on like a spiritual quest and journey to rediscover and to lay the foundation correctly. Once I laid the foundation correctly spiritually and let light in to establish brick by brick and let love be everything in the mortar to hold the bricks together, then the house, very easy to build. Everybody like build the house, but they're building that motherfucker on sand. Yeah, the Messiah says, brother, no, build your house on sand. Build them on the rock. Because when Hurricane Katrina come, the only houses that gonna be standing is the one that took into consideration that there was gonna be on a hurricane in the first place. Yeah. And the hurricanes is the winds of life, right? It's the pain, it's the trauma, it's the everyday issues in your family. Stay solid, stay founded, you know, stay rooted and grounded. And the only thing that can do that, as the Messiah also says, is you build it on the rock of truth. Build it on truth. And then he says what? I am the truth, the spirit, the principle, the spirit of God, of the source, of the creator. That's the ultimate truth. It's the only thing that is existing at all times, at all things. It's the manna. Reconnect to your manna. Reconnect to the truth of the spirit of love, you know, of being made in the image of the creator, being a creator, having access to this internal potential that is you, that's yours, you know. And to walk in it with courage and bravery, knowing full well you may not return. Knowing full well that if I live, you know, bro, if I leave Tahiti and I'm going to be out in the ocean for 3 weeks, knowing full well that there's a potential I could die. But your faith, your trust in like, Akua gonna follow through for me on this one. I gonna trust in my skills, my capabilities, but I also gonna trust that, brah, I'm gonna get there. Why? The higher purpose is for my people, it's for Ohana, it's for the world, it's for, you know, our culture, it's for things that are beyond yourself. If what you do is only limited to the motivation of you, you know, one person I like on my team.
Bro, that's such a good place to end, but I have one more question that I have to ask you about.
Yes.
You just like randomly dropped in there, I quit everything in my life, and for 2 to 3 years I just drove Uber and had a spiritual awakening. And so I'm curious, what caused that and what did you do during those couple of years?
Yes.
Just at the very end, after an hour, you just dropped that bomb. And I'm like, wait a minute, bro, come on.
Well, yeah, brother, you know, I've lived like 6 lifetimes in one, bro. My goodness gracious. You know, it's what was needed, brother, you know, so which, you know, puts into like another layer of like, how bad do you want it? You know, which really is a question that only if people are put into a state of survival, they really begin asking. Yeah. Like, if stuff gets hard, are you just going to quit? Are you just going to cry about it? Like, come on, dude. You know, like I come out of a family, a culture of warriors. I come out of a people who are strong. I come out of a resilient people. I come out of a people that is willing to put their life on the line for things that each of us believe in, you know. And I was willing. I had an awareness of where I was at in my life in that current time in my early to mid 20s. Yeah, just like in my early 20s, trying to become a successful man, you know, like to do good, to help people in my ohana, you know, really trying to do the best. But, you know, as I stated earlier, you can only do what you can do with a limited amount of information that you may have. And, you know, I only had a limited amount of information. I didn't know how to continue on a good path. I had to make a turning point. And it's like, it seems like a common thing that a majority of people in the Western world hit in their 50s, is they have a midlife crisis. If you ask our ancestors if they had a midlife crisis, what is that? You know, midlife crisis. Because oftentimes a midlife crisis is a turning point in a person's life stemming through a revelation of what they did up to that point being completely off of who they truly are. And they're then choosing to then step back into an embodiment of who they are, but they're not sure how to do that. I hope people are able to experience that a lot younger and don't have to wait 50 years. Yeah. And it seems through conversations of people in our generation, people are reaching that a lot younger. So that's a positive. But it's because people in our parents' generation have been put into a system that was deep, that was completely detached and disconnected from who they truly are. Unfortunately, you know, and so to have sympathy on our parents, like, man, you know, they went through it to become slaves to a system that really ended up to be a flop. Like a lot of the people in our parents' generation having pensions, it's like gone. Like, come on. I mean, like their pensions are like half of their pay. How are they going to pay for that in a society that is capitalistic and is consistently having inflation? How are they going to do that? You know, like you see 80-year-old people in Hawaii still having to work a security job because like their pension and social security is not enough for them. They believed in it. You know, it was a lie. And so I hit that early on in my life, brother. I was willing to give everything up. I was willing to peel back the onion layers of identity to like truly be revealed into who I am. I was willing to give it all up while still maintaining the core of who I am. Because I always maintained the core of who I was. I know that for a fact. You know, it's always a person of aloha. I always had good intention and I love people. I never did hurt anybody in an intentional way. If I did, it was unintentional. I didn't know that I was doing it. It's so easy to make amends in comparison to the people that do stuff intentionally. Oh my goodness, you know, you got to ask Akuo for forgiveness. But anyway, I had to go through this whole process of Ho'oponopono, you know, to heal who I am, you know, to reconcile all of the wrongdoings, because Akuo told me in prayer one day that if you like me, fill you up, empty out. If you get half glass full and you still let me pour in, we're going to get convoluted in all of the stuff that already stay inside there. And you let me put the waters of life into you and you get all the mud inside there still. Connect. And then he gave me one mean, you know, it's like an olelo no eo, a Hawaiian proverb, a story that like states that each person has an ipu gourd, a gourd for resources and water and everything. And every person is holding an empty gourd at the beginning of their life. And it keeps them light. Yeah, it keeps them free. To actually be able to like implement things in the ipu gourd to its best use. So if you need water, it can become a water gourd. If you need a place to store food, it can be something like that. But ultimately, keeping it empty to have it be used all the time. Every time you make a bad decision, it's putting a rock into the ipu gourd. And if you aren't able to just empty out the ipu gourd, or to have the inspiration to put your hand into it, to pull out this rock, you know, to place it in the right place, you know, and to mitigate and to heal and to clear everything in the vessel, then every bad decision, everything you did that caused, you know, a little bit of pain and friction upon subitor space, that's like a pebble of different sizes going into the ipu board. A majority of people have never gone through a real baptism, a real cleansing ceremony. They've never been cleared. They haven't ever been invited to look at these things that we consider in like our New Age talk to be in the skeleton, you know, to be in the closet, to be in the shadow. They've never been introduced to it. And so by the ending of their lives, they're carrying around an ipu gourd that they can no longer carry. It becomes an anchor on their ankle. And they get tired and they don't have access to their full potential. All they gotta do is pick up the gourd and empty it out. That's all they gotta do. That's all they gotta do. And so, you know, the spirit of the creator came to me and all of my kupuna, all of my ancestors, and began to plant these important tools, stories, and lessons into me. And I had to make a decision of how much I really wanted it and what I wanted to actually give up, you know, to live the life that I've always wanted to live. But in this direction that I was going, it wasn't going to happen. So I started peeling back everything, brother, peeling back every part of who I am. And as I started to peel things back, you know, different truths and instructions started coming to me. And a pivotal point of my life is when I decided to go on a 3-week fast. I didn't eat anything for 3 weeks and fasted fully. Why? Because I'm looking at the story of the Messiah, and the Messiah is like, Akua even told the Messiah, come on. He's coming to the earth, Baga is as pure as can be. Ba even then, ba, Akua go, how ain't you like do this ministry and really carry this? You got to go into the desert, how ain't no water, no food, find what you can. But no eating for 40 days, only prayer. Hopefully you can find water. If you need to be nourished just to endure to the next day, I'm going to give you something maybe. He had to do that, Kana. Only when he did that and Akua put a test to the flesh. The spirit I trust, but it's the flesh that always, you know, interrupting into people's lives. The ego, you know. All the desires of the flesh that try to steer you away from the connection to spirit, all of that stuff. It had to be put to the test. And so for me, it had to be put to the test, bro. I did that, kind of. I got introduced to things in me that I never had revealed in my life. And then the real work started after that, you know, to really begin to engage in this deep hidden, you know, spaces in me and my karma that I had to just go through the process of healing and reconciling, you know, my own pain and trauma, addictions of the flesh and different things that started coming up. And once that started happening, it took me to a stage two. Then boom, I got introduced to plant medicine and ceremony. And that in and of itself began to change my entire life forever. That's the reason why I'm a plant medicine advocate. I hold spaces on plant medicine on a pretty consistent basis. It takes a lot of energy. So I'm trying to put a lot of emphasis on the people in the Hawaiian community now to heal our traumas. Because I learned that once I started to go there in a space and container that was safe, that was open, that was loving and, you know, in a professional way, I'm trained in speaking and facilitating. And so I facilitate spaces. That's just what I do. And so I like learned that like people needed space held for them in order to get introduced to who they really are. And up to this point, I've held over 150, 200 spaces on plant medicine. It's been phenomenal. It's helped our community and it's only going to continue. And so it's been a blessing, bro. And so that's how we do that. That's how we come to this work, because this concept and idea of awakened aloha it has a past context to it, awakened, because I'm speaking what needs to be happened and to come into fruition. That everybody has aloha. And when you come into our space and our work, what I know is going to be a guarantee is when you leave us and our space, is that aloha is going to be awakened in you. It's going to be. It must be. Because in the presence of love, everything else is not able to coexist, bro. Any fear, any doubt, any insecurity, in the presence of real aloha, it's a baptism of truth and love in all ways. And so, yeah, bro, I hope that gives you a little bit of a sneak peek.
Sneak peek, bro. Man, you're just such a unique character, my man. And I just have huge respect and admiration for the path that you've walked and the path that you're carving forward, not just for yourself and your family, but the community at large and hopefully the planet. So thank you for the work you do and thanks for being here. And I know you've got an Instagram account that I can direct people to, but are there other ways that people can find you?
So at S-O-N of Oahu, yeah, the son of Oahu is kind of like a term and a mimicker that I took on as a brand. It's been pretty good, pretty effective.
Doing all right.
on all platforms, and all of the links to our website, Awakened Aloha. If you just go on Google and put in Awakened Aloha, all of our stuff is going to pop up. If you go on Google, if you put in Elijah McShane, all of our stuff is going to pop up. And please stay tuned. Our podcast is going to be coming soon. We are introducing each month. I'm going to be introducing a single each month. And I'm working on a music project to help our people of Maui, like amongst a few of our projects. But I'm introducing a music project of collective artists who have connections to Hawaii, who come from Hawaii, to be a heartbeat of our people of Hawaii and the message of aloha around the world. And it's happening. And in the next 8 to 10 months, I'm going to be introducing a book. It's going to be called The Way of Aloha, and The Way of Aloha is going to be teaching you guys all of the things that I just spoke about here, about how to implement all the cultural values of Hawaii as a spiritual philosophy of reconnecting to who you are and bringing world peace to our planet. It's the path of Aloha and the way of Aloha. Yeah.
Thanks. Well, in a year when your book's out, I'm going to text you every day until you agree to come back on the podcast.
I will be on. I am committed, brother. Hey, I'm a person of building good relationships and alliances, brother. And you know, brah, we are living in a time where peace and love and connection needs to be at the forefront of our cultures and not excluding who we are because of our own uniqueness and preservation of our own selves and culture. I feel that it's a positive to invite people into culture as long as the culture integrity is maintained in its people. Yeah. And so, bro, I'm here to build love and alliances. And I always tell people, each person I put an investment in building a relationship with, I have no intentions of it being just like a short-term relationship. I only build eternal relationships. And so, brother, it's good to be a brother. Bro, it's good to be on the same team. It's good to be in the band of warriors of light who is going to bring change into our planet and our generation. Bro, I appreciate you. I love you, bro. Thank you, bro.
Amen. Right back.
That was my conversation with Elijah McShane. And as mentioned, I've included links in the show notes to all of his stuff, the various social media accounts, and everything else that you need to find more of him and his medicine. I recommend you check out his Instagram. It's a solid follow. He is always a breath of fresh air and some brave truth-telling and community building, which I think we can all agree the world needs a little bit more of. But thank you for being here. Thanks for listening. If you've got people in your life that you think would enjoy this podcast, please do send it along to them. Thank you for subscribing and leaving 5-star reviews. It all helps. It all helps us to have some conscious conversations that unite the collective and try to make kindness cool, which is what it's all about. I adore you. I appreciate you. and I will talk to you soon.